From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
There are times when you save, and there are times when you
save big.
Whoa. Take vehicle loans, for instance. Any time of the year, Pyramid Federal Credit Union can help you save with lower rates. But now, for a limited time, we're helping you
save big.
That means rates as low as 4.5% APR when you buy or refinance a vehicle loan. Plus terms up to 60 months, whether it's new or used. You won't just save. You'll
save big.
That never gets old. Stop by any Pyramid Federal Credit Union or visit us at pyramidfcu.com to learn more. That's 4.5% APR vehicle loans for a limited time. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options.
That's huge.
Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Learn more at pyramidfcu.com. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
A simple solution to foot and lower back problems could be a top-quality, custom-made foot orthotic created by Bob Novak. A certified pedorthist, Bob is the best in Southern Arizona in the creation of the right foot support that your body needs and at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak a call, 795-2553, or visit him at Arizona Limb and Brace, Rosemont and Fifth Street. Your feet will thank you every day. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. Today we are presenting segments that have previously aired on the Buckmaster Show, and we believe they are worth another listen. The Friday edition of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net. Now let's talk space. With NASA's space shuttle program not retired and the International Space Station set to follow suit within 10 years, Mars is quickly emerging as the next big thing in human space travel. Not only is it Earth's closest sibling and a logical next step in exploring the solar system, but thanks to unmanned orbiters and rovers, it has also recently begun spilling its secrets like never before. A flurry of new research points to water on Mars, suggesting the red planet was once and may still be hospitable to life. Dr. Mark Sykes joins us now. He's the Buckmaster Show contributor on space exploration. Dr. Sykes is the CEO and director of the Planetary Science Institute, a Tucson-based nonprofit engaged in the exploration of the solar system. He chairs the Small Bodies Assessment Group for NASA and serves on the Planetary Science Subcommittee of the NASA Advisory Council. He's the discoverer of comet dust trails. He's identified banks of interplanetary dust arising from asteroid collisions, and he also determined the temperature of Pluto. And it's good to see you, Dr. Sykes. Mark, always good to see you.
Great to be here,
Bill. Again, I'll ask you, what is the temperature of Pluto? It's cold. Is it safe?
No. It's equator. It's a balmy 55 degrees above absolute zero. So, okay. At the poles, it gets a little colder.
So I would need my highest level goose down jacket on Pluto.
Yes.
Would you agree with what many of the science writers are saying, that Mars really is kind of the next big thing to get the general public excited about space exploration?
Well, I think Mars has always been an exciting place, and people have always been excited. Maybe go back to Edgar Rice Burroughs and his novels, over 100 years ago.
About the canals. Didn't he write about canals on Mars?
Percival Lowell talked about the canals, and Edgar Rice Burroughs, a novelist, wrote fiction about civilizations on the surface and under the surface. But, Mars has always been an exciting place, and because of its proximity and similarity in a lot of respects to the Earth, we view it as a place to go to. It's another destination for us, though one would hope that it's not a destination where you come back, plant a flag and come back and say, hey, that was great.
It's something that we can actually establish, perhaps, not just go and then say we did it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what we did
presence.
with the moon.
A place that we could potentially colonize. Of course, that's a little further down the road than the near term. And Mars exploration right now, you were mentioning about the shuttle coming to an end and the questions about future of the space station. Mars exploration itself is under threat even today. We just had a little collapse with the Europeans over joint ventures to Mars in 2016 and 2018. But because of budget pressures here at home, we can't really guarantee the launch vehicle that we'd promised. And so now that seems to be falling apart, and we may not have those next major missions to Mars.
And I think the most exciting thing to the general public when it comes to Mars is this whole idea of whether there was once life on Mars, or perhaps some form of life exists even now on mm-hmm. Mars. And there was a very interesting discovery that was made, a fossil discovery, recently in Australia, and I think we're talking about fossils 3.5 billion years ago, that perhaps, they existed in an environment that had virtually no oxygen or very little oxygen.
Yeah, that's correct. It's a really neat discovery. And people should realize that today's Earth was not always like it is today. Our atmosphere is 78% nitrogen, 21% oxygen.
You mean it wasn't always 100 and over 100 degrees in October in southern Arizona?
The oxygen that's in the Earth's atmospheres today is from life. And back billions of years ago, before oxygen-generating life arose, the atmosphere had very little oxygen in it. But there was life on the Earth. And what this fossil shows is a bacterial or cellular fossil of life that didn't use oxygen for energy as we do today, but used sulfur compounds as energy. And we have examples of that down in the darkest part of the oceans by those vents in the deep ocean, where you get some bacteria that uses hydrogen sulfide and other such compounds for its energy source. So
their energy source is not dependent on oxygen way down there.
Right.
There's no oxygen, or virtually no oxygen.
Yeah, it's a pretty anoxic environment. Yeah. And so back billions of years ago on the Earth, where there wasn't much in the way of free oxygen around at all, life had to depend on other energy sources. And as they said in that movie, Jurassic Park, life will find a way, and it found a way with these sulfur compounds.
The folks who study Mars are excited about this fossil discovery in Australia, because I think they're looking perhaps that there could be some parallels to Mars.
Well, we've learned from our Mars missions that you were mentioning before that there's a lot of sulfur on Mars, and but there's also liquid water even today, and so there's a range of conditions under which life that we're familiar with could live that might have existed or exist presently on that planet. And so I think one of the exciting things to do in the perhaps the near future is to send a small rover craft there to go take a peek at these areas where water's been coming up to the surface. Maybe scoop some up, throw a microscope at it, and see if there's anything swimming around.
You are on, as I mentioned in the introduction, the subcommittee, the Planetary Science Subcommittee on NASA, their advisory council. And economics seem to be dominating, I guess, your most recent meetings.
Yes, you know, no flow, no go, as they say. And the solar system exploration budget under the administration's plan is declining by 20% over the next 5 years, which is not good. Added to that, we have other pressures like cost overruns from the James Webb Space Telescope, which went from a $1 billion project in 2001 to an $8.7 billion project today, and it's looking for food. And they're, you know, looking at the planetary budget to help pay some of that, and there's some protests in the community about that. But there's a lot of pressures that are coming to bear, and so we're beginning to have to face some tough choices about what in this country what activities do we need to preserve to make sure that we have the capabilities to continue our exploration programs in a vibrant way, you know, when things get better and more resources become available.
The timetable for Mars, as far as human space travel to Mars, was something around the decade of 2030. Is that what you understand?
Yeah, something like that. But there's
that seems to get pushed back, I
sure,
guess.
Sure, sure. Yeah, yeah. We don't have the vehicles to get there. We don't.
20
have
years ago, folks were talking about the decade, probably of 2010, mm-hmm. being perhaps a Mars mission.
Well, there's some homework that we need to do in that regard. I mean, one of the things is we know that humans don't we don't want to expose them to deep space for more than 6 months, and a round trip human to Mars would give you a lot more exposure to that because of radiation and increased cancer risks. There's also,
what is the travel time to Mars?
Oh, I think that if you just go there and back, that we're probably talking about more than a year. And then there's all the fuel. You know, right now we have to launch all the fuel up from the surface of the Earth, and if we have to carry up all the fuel at $10,000 a pound to get to Mars and back, it gets a little on the pricey side. So
there's the energy source issue of getting the spacecraft to Mars. Then
yes.
There's the radiation issue mm-hmm. on the human beings.
But these are good challenges. You know, these are fun things to consider. I mean, with the energy source, one of the things that my group, the Small Bodies Assessment Group, have been pushing is that we know that there are asteroids that are orbits very, very near the Earth's orbit, half of which may be sources of water. That water thing again. Well, mm-hmm. water is not just important to life, but water is also important as a source of gas for powering rockets, as well as life support and shielding.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways, with 30 projects underway, including the intersection at Golf Links and Kolb and the Star Pass Mission Road intersection. Please use caution and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has also implemented transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel around our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson.
just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Want to lose weight? You're not alone. Two out of three people in this country are now overweight. Using Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope, created by renowned cardiologist Dietmar Gahn, you could lose 5 to 15% of your body weight in just 6 weeks. The program teaches proper nutrition and uses no drugs or artificial foods. Most insurance is accepted. To learn more, visit dietofhope.org or call 696-DIET.
Firo Amori presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh, homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Firo Amori. Casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Firo Amori in Tucson on North Swan at Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at viroamoripizza.com. And now in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
You're listening to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. Today we are presenting segments that are previously aired on the Buckmaster Show, and we believe they are worth another listen. The Friday edition of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net. Marie Badishir, I know her as AKA Bunny Badishir. I don't think I've ever had to say your real first name, Bunny Badishir.
I lead two lives.
Okay, is that what's going on? And your work, of course, has appeared in many publications, including Arizona Highways and National Geographic Traveler. Bunny's co-author is also with us, Charnel Havens, who lives in Virginia. She's an award-winning photographer and real estate agent. She has devoted time throughout the last 15 years to pursuing her passion, which is paying tribute to the life and legacy of this gifted Navajo artist, Quincy Tohoma. Ladies, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Bill.
Charnel, we'll begin with you. What was your attraction? When did you first hear about Quincy Tohoma?
When I was about 13, my aunt came back with five of his paintings in Ohio, and they were on her wall for 40 years. So I lived with them for 40 years, fell in love with them, and became attached to them.
And how about you, Bunny Badishir? When did you first become acquainted with Quincy Tohoma?
Although I had worked with Indian art when I lived in Scottsdale and was always interested in it, I really had not heard of Quincy Tohoma until Charnel introduced me.
What was it about this particular artist that resonated with you? I'll begin with Charnel.
There was something spiritual about his paintings. His landscapes were absolutely gorgeous, and his people just came to life. His buffalo hunts were something to just fall in love with. So I did, and I wanted to know more about the man behind the scene.
Bunny, his work just really evokes, and I'm looking at the cover here of Quincy Tohoma, The Life and Legacy of a Navajo Artist, and it's an image of
a Native American involved. Well, he's on horseback and he's in the buffalo chase. I think the thing that really attracts me to this artist, the action sequences and the movement that he captures.
Yes, he does an amazing job of that. And he loved to paint warriors, horses, buffalo. It was what he pictured as the past of his people. But he also had a quieter side, and he painted some beautiful paintings of Navajo mothers and children, quiet little deer and antelopes. And so he had a very wide scope.
Charnel, what was his life? He had a rather short life, I guess you could say a tragic life.
He was 38 when he died in 1956, and he died as a consequence of alcoholism. As a young man, he was brought up the reservation to be put into the Indian school system, and from then he had many ups and downs, which are all covered in the book, of course.
Bunny Battishere, how difficult was it to recreate and find the images? His work, was it widely available or was it difficult to find?
Well, Quincy Tohoma's work is still being sold at auction and in specialist Indian art stores, but a good half of the paintings that are in this book are actually from private homes and have never been seen in public before. Several years ago, Charnel started a website for Quincy Tohoma, and then later we started a blog for Quincy Tohoma, which is called tohomablog.com. And people just poured in with messages about, my uncle had a painting by Quincy Tohoma, my grandmother owned one, I grew up with it. And so we got images of those paintings, which Charnel usually photographed, and we got the stories behind those paintings.
What period of time of the, we're talking mid-20th century, Charnel?
Yes, he started painting actually in 1932. That's the earliest that we have on record. So he was in about the fifth grade in school at that time, and he painted until he died in 1956.
Charnel, was he a self-taught artist, or did he learn in school, or how did that work?
He got the basics when he was at the Santa Fe Indian School from Dorothy Dunn, who was quite an acclaimed art teacher, and she founded the studio from which many, many wonderful Indian artists came.
Bunny Battishere, his work seems to be almost, it's difficult to categorize it comparing his work to other artists of the time. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. You can see an influence from other artists in certain individual paintings, but he did definitely break new ground. Early on, Quincy was influenced by the other students at the Navajo, both Navajo, Pueblo, and Plains Indians that he met at the Indian school. And then later in life, and even up to today, he has influenced other Indian artists. Our last chapter in the Quincy Tohoma book is current day artists talking about how they were influenced by Quincy Tohoma.
Is this the right word, perhaps, Bunny or Charnel? It looks almost, some of these pieces, I'm looking at a work called Grand Canyon Beauty, and it really is a beautiful piece. It's dated 1953. It seems modernist. Would that be a good characterization of the painting?
In a sense, he did experiment with color and with composition. But he never departed into like abstract art. He didn't get to that point. That came along among Indian artists in the 1960s.
So this would be considered more of a realist? How do you characterize the work?
Well, a lot of people call it traditional art, which is a misnomer because it's not traditional, but it is what was taught by non-Indians to the young Indian students.
The book is called Quincy Tohoma, The Life and Legacy of a Navajo Artist. Charnel Havens and Bunny Battishere are the co-authors. Charnel, how difficult was it putting this project together? And by the way, you found a publisher who really does care because the reproductions are fantastic.
Thank you.
I think you had something to do with some of these images, correct?
I did. I photographed quite a few of them.
Terrific.
But with regard to the difficulty, if Bunny and I, either one, had had thin skins and had not been determined Ohio-born women, we would have quit a long time ago.
Both of you, I believe, were sorority sisters at Columbus at the Ohio State University.
We were.
And kept in touch and then developed this common ground for Quincy, Tahoma.
Yes, we did. We did. When you ask how difficult
yes.
it was, there are very few records, written records, of a lot of things like births. And so we actually didn't learn the situation of his birth until we were into 7 years of the research.
Are any museums showing his work, or is this book maybe one of the few places you can find his work?
Many of the major museums that carry American Indian art have his work. The Herd has, I believe, 19 paintings. That's in Phoenix. There are many, many museums. Well, the Smithsonian National Museum of the American Indian has quite a few also.
Arizona State Museum
Arizona State here in Tucson
yeah. has some of his paintings, and they also have about 50 small paintings that he did while he was a student.
Right.
What was the medium that he worked in? Mainly watercolor?
Watercolors.
It was mainly watercolor.
Exclusively.
It was exclusively watercolor.
Mm-hmm, right.
And there are the few pencil drawings in here, but early
That's
in
right.
his career.
We were very privileged to find a sketchbook, 1943 and 44, the only one that we've ever seen. And in it there was one in particular that we really loved. It was of a baby antelope. And totally by coincidence, I have the completed painting that matches that.
Where did you find that? Through an auction or just?
No, actually through our website and email, and it led us to a gentleman in New York, in the New Jersey area, who had it.
And again, the website?
The website itself is tahoma.info.
That's T-A-H-O-M-A.
Right, and the blog is tahomablog.com.
And the book is available where?
The book is available at independent bookstores, museums, and it is available on our website, on our blog and website.
And you two have a book signing this afternoon, I believe, right?
We do. People can come down to El Charro Cafe, to the patio, between 3 and 5, and say hi to us. And we're up in Scottsdale on Thursday at Guide On Books.
And a native, what was the magazine that just said this was would be a great Christmas gift?
Native People's Magazine featured it as one of their recommendations for Christmas presents.
I think that is a terrific recommendation. It is a beautiful book. And again, the book is Quincy Tahoma. That's T-H-H-O-M-A, The Life and Legacy of a Navajo Artist. Charnel Havens and Bunny Badisher are the co-authors.
Actually, Vera Marie Badisher.
Vera Marie Badisher. Thank you very much. Have a great afternoon. Good luck with the book signing.
Thanks very much.
That wraps up this special edition of the Buckmaster Show. The Friday edition of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net. Additional support comes from Flowers Rieger & Associates, certified public accountants, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at FlowersRieger.com. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Master Communications, LLC. On behalf of my producer, Rosemary Brandt, I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe holiday weekend.